Hey, Charlotte. I just wanted to let you know that we recorded this episode mere minutes before Annalise Dodds tendered her resignation as a government minister over the foreign aid cuts. The rest, I think the conversation still holds, but just wanted to let you know that in case you think we've rather missed a significant development. We will pick it up in the next episode. So enjoy this one for now. Hello and welcome to House of Commons. I'm Charlotte Henry. She in body, but perhaps not, or in spirit, but perhaps not in mind, is Emma Bunnell. How are you?
I think I'm me in mind. I've just got a cough, Charlotte. I haven't actually coughed out my entire personality.
Well.
Are you just saying that, you know, I've turned 50, it's Soylent Green. I'm just fish food now.
I'm just saying we had a very good night on Saturday is what I'm saying.
We did have a fabulous, fabulous time.
Happy birthday, my love.
Thank you very much again.
My lovely co-host turned 21 on Saturday. We had a very good night to celebrate. Involved various hugs and dancing with your sister. Your nephew is at least twice as tall as me.
Oh my God, isn't he like a mountain?
He is a fully grown human as opposed to me. And a delightful chap with it. And we all had a very nice time. And it was lovely, 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 all joking aside, to see people celebrating you, talk about all the wonderful things you've done. And it was lovely to be part of your celebrations. Did you have a good time?
I had a genuinely lovely time. Obviously, I've been working up to this party for a really long time. And you know that that can sometimes be like, oh God, it's all over now. But that was just so lovely. It was really
lovely. I'm actually going to give some listeners a bit of background information on this. I received multiple invitations and invites in the name of Emma's sister to said party. The idea that Emma's sister actually was in control of anything.
She was in control of a fair amount.
Emma.
But, yeah.
You project managed her, bless her.
I did project manage it, yes.
But this
no, she project managed in terms of delivering for her client, and I gave her the brief.
Let's leave it at that. Emma, you see, this is the problem when you work with or for or are related to someone that does events professionally.
It's true. It's very true.
But we all had a lovely night. Do you feel different? Do you feel enlightened? Do you feel a wiser person now you're 50?
I stayed up till 3:30 on the night and got horribly ill. Through any abuse of my body for once, but because I have a rotten, rotten cold.
Yep.
These
are the sacrifices
we have to
make.
No, I'm not entirely sure I am wiser.
Well, I certainly wasn't. And I think the last time I saw you, I was multiple gin and tonics into an evening. So anyway,
I was just drinking Diet Coke and I still felt rough the next day. It's just not fair.
Well, you know, a good time was had by all. And now we have to talk about politics. I'm really sorry. Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer has made his pilgrimage to Washington to see the Donald. There's a lot I want to unpack from this, actually. And I'm really interested in your view on all of it. From inside the Labour Party, actually, because I think that's where a lot of the interesting, well, there's international dynamics, which are fascinating, we can talk about. But because I have the privilege of speaking to you, I'm really interested in the internal dynamics. So let's do the big international stuff first. Obviously, we've got Donald Trump making his proclamations about Ukraine, trying to do this deal with Ukraine and the minerals. In typical fashion, it feels to me, and correct me if you think you feel any differently. Everything is transactional. Everything is presented like a business deal, not a diplomatic or political one. That's how it all feels to me when it comes to Ukraine. I'm somewhat horrified that the Americans voted with Russia, North Korea and Belarus at the UN. Have I said anything you fundamentally disagree with thus far?
No, I think that's absolutely right. I think that what's happening is that people are slightly learning how to play that transactional piece. So while there is nothing about security guarantees, as we understand it, in the deal with Ukraine, if you look at where those minerals are, an awful lot of them are in Russian-held territory.
How interesting.
Indeed. And if the Americans have a whole load of business interest in disputed territories, territories that are right on the borders of that disputed territory, then there is going to be, whether it's private security or US Army, there's going to be security there.
We saw a bit of a bromance. I was quite taken aback by this with Macron, President Macron of France and President Trump. Macron used all his French charisma and flirtation, didn't he, to get to play with Trump, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, they were basically flirting. I mean, and this is the thing about Trump is that he is coquettish sometimes. It's not a word you'd necessarily immediately associate with him, no. But it is how he behaves.
The problem is, and all the world leaders, I think, have learned this from the first time. You just have to massage his ego.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, however much it might grind your gears to do so, however much it might annoy your immediate constituents to do so, it's the way, it's the price of doing business.
Yeah, well, it certainly seems to be at the moment. And then following President Macron, as I say, Sir Keir has flown to Washington. Talking of coquettish, can we talk about, again, Peter Mandelson being just on fine form as the US ambassador? Have you seen any clips from the evening before the dinner that was held in the ambassador's residence?
No, I haven't. I mean, Peter Mandelson, you know, if you look up the word coquettish in the dictionary.
Well, quite. And he was just in wonderful form. I'm really enjoying this appointment, I have to say. I really am. Sorry, slight diversion. Did I tell you about the time when I went to the podcast show and I saw him, Danny Finkelstein, doing a panel with Matt Chorley on their, and Polly McKenzie, on their podcast, about their podcast?
No.
Oh, Peter Mandelson's bitchiness was turned up to 11. He was on magnificent form. The others were sort of giving him a nudge, and he was just on fabulous form, amazing stuff. And he seems to have brought, well, obviously he takes his role very seriously. I'm being a bit disingenuous, but he does have that kind of, look, he does have the charisma and the charm to pull off a role like that, doesn't he?
Yeah. So I've been rewatching The West Wing recently.
Of course you have.
Well, it's slightly annoying, actually.
Let's do a paid podcast
I love it, but I do think it's had real damaging impacts on British politics in many, many ways.
I entirely agree with you. We're going to do a paid podcast on it because I love this subject.
But the guy who becomes British ambassador, Lord John Marbury, is this very, very flamboyant figure with Peter Mandelson's hair, frankly.
Yes.
And while Mandelson is not flamboyant in the same way.
And not posh in the same way.
Not posh in the same way, though does his level best to sound it. There is, I think, a direct comparison that can be drawn. And I think that is...
Oh, fascinating.
I think that's how the Yanks see what a British ambassador should look like and feel like and be like.
Yeah, I have to say... I wasn't sure when Mandelson was picked for that role, but I tell you what, first of all, he's having the time of his life.
Yeah.
Let's not pretend otherwise. Secondly, he seems to be doing quite good. The bits I've seen are great. So he had this dinner before, and then obviously we had the meetings of the two, of the Prime Minister and the President. Ahead of that, because... Sir Keir obviously felt like he needed to do something ahead of time to go with something. We had this announcement of raising defence spending to 2.5% GDP by 2027, and also to pay for that, reducing aid to, was it 0.3% of GDP? So, first of all, I have two questions for you on this, and I've been actually really looking forward to discussing this with you all week. Sorry for being such a nerd. First of all, what's your personal take on these policies? That's what I want to start with.
Look, In an ideal world, we would need less defence money. We would need less international development money because an ideal world would need less of that. In an ideal Britain, but not an ideal world, we would have enough to fund both. I think that international development is incredibly important as part of our soft power. I think it might be short-termist to cut it. I think sometimes some of the ways that it's been done has not necessarily been to the ideal, but I think that's true of anything where you're spending more than 5p, frankly. So if it's going to be cut by 0.2%, then they need to be really, really conscious of what they are paying for and making sure that they're keeping the most effective programs open and running, trying to find other ways in through
Yeah.
them. I think we do. I think that Europe has sleepwalked into the fact that the NATO alliance has not actually been a thing for really, 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 probably since Iraq.
You mean in practical terms?
Yeah, look at, and this isn't just Republicans and evil Trump. Obama had red lines in Syria that were trampled all over and nothing happened. The America as the world's police has not been a thing since the disaster that was Iraq.
I
And that
really
is
wish you
just
hadn't
true.
said that because now I've
Now
been
that's all you can
distracted.
hear in your head is America, world police. Yeah.
Because you're making really serious points that I really want to discuss, but now all I can see is that film and hear that song, and I'm furious at you. But I won't distract us from the serious points you make because I want to dive into them. So I think a lot of what you've said is true. I think that there's so many interesting dynamics at play here. Your points about the NATO alliance are really interesting because often it's been, maybe the US going alone on things, the US and the UK going alone on things, sometimes the French chip in. But there does seem to have now ended the age of us all being allowed to rely on the Americans as the world police if
Well, I
something
said I
terrible
think that
happens.
age ended some time ago. We just didn't notice.
Do you
The
think?
only difference with Trump is that we've noticed.
Do you really think? Okay.
Yeah, I do. I think that Syria demonstrated that. I think that Rwanda demonstrated that in some ways. These things have been going on in the world. Where is America in Sudan?
Yeah. No, but the in Syria, Rishi Sunak authorized military action that was US and the UK working together.
Yeah, on occasion we might step in and do a thing, but it is not a blanket coverage of the world's problems being sorted out by the one
Ah, I see what you mean.
superpower.
Okay, true.
And
Yeah, they're not in the
they're
Congo at the
very
moment.
picky and choosy. They're not in the Congo, they're not in Sudan, they're not doing an awful lot in terms of the conflict in the Middle East. They're not doing an awful lot in terms of,
Wait, I thought Trump had solved everything in the Middle East.
well, apparently he's going to put up a condo that won't get bombed. I don't see how that doesn't get bombed, but that's
Okay,
his
perfect. Good. Good to
insurance
know.
problem.
Good to know.
I just think that Trump is horrendous and awful and gauche.
Yeah.
But America's stance has not changed as much as people like to pretend that it has.
Really interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I entirely agree with that, but it's a really interesting point, actually. And I'm really pleased you brought it up because I'm now trying to ponder the sort of last few years, and it's a really interesting discussion. You and I were both very critical, as I recall, when Rishi Sunak rolled back some US, didn't he cut it from 0.7 to 0.5?
Yeah.
And you and I were both very critical. I maintain that criticism because I think the point about it is that it's a percentage. Now, we can have a debate whether a percentage of GDP is a sensible way to assign costs to things, right? We can have that debate. Is that a sensible thing to do? Is it not a sensible thing to do?
It does seem bizarre to me.
That this has become
both
so...
in international development, but more in defence.
Sure.
The shibboleth of it has to be X percentage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, totally. No, surely what we want to do is work out what we need and then how much that costs.
You've definitely been watching The West Wing if you've just dropped shibboleth into an episode.
This is also true.
But yes, you're right. It does. It has become this sort of untouchable thing. 2.5%, 0.7, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I agree with all of that. But given that that sort of has been institutionalised, I am still critical of cutting aid, because the whole point about it being a percentage is if your economy's growing, you give more.
Yeah,
if
yeah,
your economy
yeah.
is shrinking. We made that criticism yeah. of Rishi Sunak, and I want to make it again of Keir Starmer because I think it's
yeah,
fair.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's completely fair. I am really sad that this has been done. I understand the real politique of it, but I don't think in the short term it makes sense. In the long term, it makes no sense.
Right. And the second thing I want to make, and this actually, I was listening to a fantastic episode of another podcast. It's called, you know, Not Another World, with Tim Montgomery, Ian Martin, Steve Richards and Miranda Green. And they were having a really good discussion about this ahead of the visit. It was Tim that made the point that if you believe in cutting migration, as he does, you can't then also cut aid. Because if you want people to stay where they are, you have to create, help them have the conditions where they can live in that country.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
It was a great point.
I would go considerably further than Tim, because Tim is a mad climate skeptic. And I would say that one of the major push factors that is going to be prevalent in this century is countries that are closer to the equator becoming more and more unlivable as a result of increased temperatures. And we could and should be investing in vast changes to their infrastructure to enable them to adapt to that.
Yeah. And in this discussion, and I think it's one point you've just made as well, they were pointing out the importance of soft power through aid. And Miranda made the point that given Elon Musk has scrapped US aid, apparently a lot of our programs, our aid programs, were, you know, put into practice via USA, the functions of the Americans. And so actually, if they've scrapped that, maybe our money can't be spent anyway, which is another interesting point.
There was a lot of delivery vehicle there. I think there's been some confusion because some of the delivery vehicles are actually through WHO. And it was the US leaving the WHO that's made it very hard for some USAID programs that still exist to actually be delivered.
But also our functions were delivered via the US.
Yeah.
So,
well, again, it's supply chains. It's
sure.
huge, huge problems of
sure.
exactly. These are all very interconnected problems.
So the point was maybe they looked at the spreadsheet and went, we can't actually do this anyway, so cut it.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It's perfectly possible.
But I'm going to stick to my point of principle. Now, the thing I've been dying to ask you as well, what's been the reaction within the various parts of the Labour Party to this?
I haven't seen anyone going massively loopy. I think there's a certain amount of realism that Trump exists and we have to deal with him this time. I don't think that the left has responded to Trump in 2024 the same way they responded in 2016. The resistance hasn't gone shooting out into outer space.
Really?
Oh, yeah, completely. I mean, it's almost non-existent. It's almost gone too far the other way.
Are you talking about the UK or both?
I'm talking about both.
I don't agree with you in the US, actually. Now, that may just be being in an online bubble, but I don't necessarily agree with you.
You spend too much time on Blue Sky then.
That may well be entirely true.
Do not spend all your time on Blue Sky. It's a very, very, very small bubble. But, I mean, just look at what's happened to the Washington Post, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. Oh, I wrote about this in my newsletter yesterday. Which clearly you've read and taken in.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm on holiday. Leave me alone. There is more hand-wringing over what the left has got wrong rather than certainty that the left is in the right.
Okay.
And I think that in terms of labour, I think there's a certain amount of, we know what we have to do and we have to suck it up. And there'll always going to be some, God, it wasn't Love Actually great when he told the president off wish fulfillment nonsense.
Yes.
But actually, I think a lot of people are like, you know, that's just bullshit, right?
It can't happen in real life.
It can't happen in real life. And actually, Starmer got the win and we'll take the win.
Well, I have to say, looking at the front pages today, it does look like a win. I mean, the Daily Mail's front page, I'm going to repeat this. The Daily Mail's front page, what an unlikely bromance with a picture of both of them. The Eye has Charmer Starmer, which charm and Keir Starmer are not words I tend to put together. Keir's Trump card on the Mirror. The Sun, special delivery. The Sun's one references that Sir Keir Starmer whips out a note from His Majesty the King inviting Trump for another state visit. The second one, which doesn't tend to happen.
I mean, it's kind of pathetic.
It all feels a bit
sick. It's the world I live in, but, you know, it is the world I live in.
You and I have different views on the monarchy, but even that, I don't entirely know why this particular president needs a second state visit. Like, obviously, you have to have proper political, diplomatic, like, no problem with any of that. Don't quite get why we need a second state visit. Is it, again, our ego massaging thing?
Yeah. We want a trade deal. He wants a state visit. Quid pro quo, Larrys.
I guess so. Just going through these headlines again. The Telegraph, the Daily Telegraph, Trump backs Starmer on Chagos. The Guardian is actually making the point you made earlier, which is Trump, US workers in Ukraine would be a security backstop. So I think if we were working in Downing Street, we'd be pretty happy today, wouldn't we?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they've played a blinder. And I'm regularly very critical of them, so I think it's only fair to be uncritical when they've done well.
They didn't win over the Daily Star, you'll be sad to know. The front page of the Daily Star is Peppa Piglet. There's a picture of Peppa Pig.
Sorry, I thought you meant the Morning Star for a minute.
No, the Daily
Star. Why on earth the Morning Star was covering Peppa Pig?
No, it's the Daily Star. There is a little bit. So in terms of the media coverage, he's got his wins.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the set of headlines you want to fly home to, frankly.
I guess that's right. I'm surprised when you say there's no pushback within Labour.
I think an awful lot of the people who would put idealism over pragmatism have left the party, frankly.
Yeah.
Look, does anyone in the Labour Party want to deal with Trump rather than anyone else? No, of course
not. Of course not. No.
But they also know that this is the world in which we live. And frankly, you know, pragmatic politics is getting on with that.
I guess you're right. You do not feel...
Like, what do you think the Labour Party members want him to do?
No, I don't know. That's why I'm asking you. I've been genuinely interested to hear your answer on it.
I think that... I think that there are things that the Labour Party membership are cross about with the Starmer regime.
Such as?
I think two-child benefit cap.
Yep.
Massively trumps Trump.
Really?
Yeah. Because it's a pragmatic thing about child poverty rather than just some sort of... pointless stance taking.
Okay, yeah.
I think that they have much bigger problems politically with the party over real issues at home than they do over whether or not he's seen as a bit too obsequious whilst getting a decent deal abroad.
Okay. And that I was fascinated to hear your answer. I really wanted to know this, so that's really interesting. I personally think it is slightly veering to the sycophantic. And I take all your points about practicality on board because you're 100% correct. You just are. I have vague recollection of Theresa May pushing back a little bit on some things to Trump.
The image that lasts with Theresa May is him grasping her hand.
Hand, yeah, horrendous. That's been replayed on TV. I do have a vague recollection of this. But anyway, the point is, my point is, I think you can do business with him without being quite so sycophantic. But the truth is, they're all doing it, aren't they? You know, I mentioned Macron earlier on.
I think the question is, did you come out of the room with the deal you wanted?
I guess so.
And it doesn't matter how you behave in the room if you get the deal you want. And if he's got, as it seems to be, have been reported, support on Chagos, potential free trade deal, which means no tariffs.
Yep.
And Ukraine slightly by the back door, but getting some security, I think then you've got what you want. It doesn't matter what you had to do to get there.
Okay. I guess you're probably... In the world of realpolitik, you are correct. Let's leave it at that. That'll be my response. The other thing I wanted to pick up on, again, I heard this discussion on said other podcast, is there are sort of Brexit consequences to this that are sort of ironic. So...
Yeah, we're going to get a European army.
Bingo. Right. One of the big themes, as you remember, leading up to the campaign and during the campaign was this sort of threat, if you like, of a European army. That might well be happening by the back door, because if the US is not providing the security guarantees that we have been somewhat accustomed to, and the Europeans are more concerned about Ukraine than the Americans are, we may well have something that resembles a European army.
Yep. And it's absolutely hilarious. You know, and I mean, one of the things that's always bugged me about the Brexiteers and their sovereignty bullshit is how willing they are to give up that sovereignty to America. And we had Jacob Rees-Mogg saying we should become the 51st state. That ain't sovereignty.
Wait. Isn't that, wouldn't we be the 52nd? Isn't Canada the 51st state?
Well, I think we may be in a race with Canada.
Okay, fine.
And so that it, you know, their idea of sovereignty is paper thin. But ultimately, it does look like our best option is to go in with the Europeans on some sort of pan-European defence pact. So, you know, the terrifying European army, super army, is coming. And it's coming possibly quicker as a result of Brexit.
Because of Brexit, but certainly because of the president that all the Conservatives were desperate to get over to see inaugurated and campaign for and wear the stupid baseball caps.
Yeah.
Certainly that all the Brexiteers love Trump, and they, you know, and now he might be creating the conditions whereby there needs to be a European army.
Yeah. Be careful what you wish for, guys.
It's a deeply, deeply ironic thing. It's been a really intriguing week to watch in all sorts of ways. I think as the weekend arrives, Sir Keir Starmer was going to think he's had a good week. There's no other way to cut it. Whether I loathe having, you know, smiling with Donald Trump or not, the reality is, as Prime Minister, as the Foreign Secretary is technically the chief diplomat, but we all know that in reality, the Prime Minister has to lead ultimately on diplomacy. He'll have considered it job done this week.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's had a good week, and I think he deserves, you know, he's had a lot of bad weeks, and I think he deserves, yeah, you know, I've always said, look, I'm a Labour partisan, but my partisanship leads me to critiquing them as much as it leads me to praising them. So when I feel like they're getting it wrong,
there's plenty of episodes where you've had a go.
Exactly. So I think it's only fair that when I think they've done well, I say so too. And I think they've done well.
And they will think so as well. Yeah. I think they've all, lots of the world leaders this time around. So I'm not just having a go at Starmer, have decided the only way to deal with Trump is to massage his ego and use that way to try and move the conditions to what they want. That is what they've all decided, isn't it? And so that is what we're seeing now.
That is definitely what we're seeing, but I think Starmer has had more concrete wins out of that than many others.
That may well be true.
I mean, if you look at tariffs, we haven't got any and others have.
It looks like, well, nothing signed, sealed, delivered.
So
nothing
far.
Signed, sealed, delivered, yeah. But that is the mood music.
Well, I mean, we literally so far have not got any tariffs and others have.
Well, that's correct. And also in terms of the deals they're discussing.
Yeah.
Both those things are true. I'm going to spare you and not talk about the Tate brothers being able to.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to spare you. I'm going to spare our listeners. It's OK. we're going to bring the show to an end without discussing them.
I have been thinking about coverage of that, actually. So I think there are two different things. And I think part of the problem is that they get conflated. The Tate brothers say vile, vile, vile things on their podcasts,
yes.
Which are not illegal. They're vile, but they're not illegal. The Tate brothers also have broken laws in multiple countries, allegedly. And what happens, because it's so easy to do, is that you get coverage of them. And I was listening to the episode of the News Agents about this last night, where they right. played loads and loads of clips of them saying vile things and then talked immediately about them being given diplomatic release from Romania. And I think there is a real issue with conflating the vile things that they say with the vile things they are, criminal things they are alleged to have done.
Yeah, really interesting point. Yeah, you're right.
And I've just been thinking and thinking, because I don't know how I would have done that episode of the News Agents any differently, but I do think that's a problem.
You're totally correct about that. And I've said that too many times this show, so we're going to end the show. Emma,
yeah. It's my birthday present.
Yeah, happy birthday. As you recover from your celebrations, where can people keep up with you?
So I'm on my Substack, which is politicalhuman@substack.com or whatever it's called. And I'm also on Blue Sky, but not very often, clearly not as often as Charlotte.
Yeah, it's been intriguing to watch it for pow. I'm at Charlotte A. Hengry across most of social media. Please head over to theaddition.net for more media, culture and sport crossover coverage. The best way to support this show is to head to patreon.com/houseofcommentspodcast, because that way, for a mere fiver a month, a mere fiver, we give you extra paid episodes. We will probably be recording one of those next week, actually.
Feels like it.
It feels like it. And so you get those extra episodes, which you can get through Patreon, and you get to become a paid subscriber to both of our newsletters that we've just mentioned. So it is real, and those newsletters go for £5 a month themselves. So really, we're doing ourselves over.
It's a steal.
Help support fiery, female-fronted political coverage. We really appreciate all of you who are there. And I guess we'll see you next week.